From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour was made on May 1st of this year, the traditional date used by colleges to require students to decide whether they are committing for the fall. It's a big day, often known as Decision Day, and yet millions of high school seniors were left in the dark regarding financial aid this year. Back in 2020, Congress decided to overhaul the FAFSA program, the Free Application for Student Aid. It was supposed to make things simpler, but the Federal Department of Education has botched the new system in countless ways, leading to what's been a kind of slow-rolling disaster. By May 1st of this year, FAFSA completions among high school seniors were down 29% compared with the prior class at the same point last year, according to the National College Attainment Network. Last month, the Government Accountability Office laid it all out in kind of gory detail. NPR reports that GAO investigators described a rollout so plagued by problems that many students had to choose and commit to a college without knowing if they could even afford it. As a result, fewer students are applying for college, fewer students are going to college, and it disproportionately is affecting poorer families. Here's how CNN described it. Quote, fewer low-income students applied for college financial aid for the current school year after the rollout of an updated version of the FAFSA was plagued with problems. Submitting the form is required in order to access federal Pell Grants, student loans, and other kinds of financial aid. Without the financial help, college could be out of reach for some students, end quote. Total FAFSA submissions were down 3%, or 432,000 total, compared with the year before as of August 25th, according to a new analysis from the GAO. And the GAO reports that students generally had about 100 fewer days to complete the FAFSA this year. It also found that nearly three-quarters of phone calls, about 4 million calls, to the Department of Education's call center went unanswered during the first 5 months of the rollout due to understaffing. All of which leads us to today's conversation. The Rochester Education Foundation has a mission of making college more accessible, no matter a student's family income or background. Now, obviously, they didn't create this recent mess, but they're doing their best to work through it with FAFSA. And that's not the only thing we're talking about. This hour, we're talking about not only what they're doing in this current climate, but what they are doing to make sure that students, really at all ages, have what they need to succeed. And that looks like a lot of different things. Amy Stein is the executive director of the Rochester Education Foundation. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having us.
Phil Hounshell is director of College Access and Success Programs for the Rochester Education Foundation. Phil, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having us.
All right, Amy, is it as bad as it sounds with this FAFSA thing?
Yes. Yes, it is. And, right?
Yeah.
So here in Rochester, our numbers of completion for this year, we had 635 students out of a total of 1,556 students complete the FAFSA for those students that are going to be enrolled in college now for the fall. That's pretty much on par with where we were before here in Rochester. And it's because of the programs that we have in place that helped us be consistent, although our consistency is still too low and our effort is to make those changes to help students. And I'm delighted that we now have Phil Hounshell in his role as the Director of College Access and Success Programs, not only to help our students in the city of Rochester access college, but also to help them succeed once they're there.
Let me make sure I think I understand where the landscape you're describing. Let me put it this way. We were a little bit insulated, at least with what the Rochester Education Foundation experiences with local students, with city students, because of the work that you're doing, that we didn't see a massive drop-off despite all of the FAFSA mess.
Oh.
But we need to help more in general year to year. Is that correct?
What you're saying is not inaccurate, but let me say very clearly, okay, especially if we have friends from financial aid offices at colleges listening, it was a nightmare. It was really, really, really tough for people. We had students absolutely struggling. We had caring families saying to us, what do we do? They, FAFSA, aren't calling us back. We can't get what we need. And because of the relationships built and the persistence that our volunteers from the Rochester College Access Network are helping families with, for us, we were able to help people as much as before. That being said, just like you said, it's still too low. But a nightmare, yes. And we're hoping that we're out of that a little bit in this coming year.
Phil, how would you describe what it has been like?
I would say that we're stepping out of the nightmare into what I believe will be a dream. So being on the front lines last year, I was supporting a lot of students who were in the middle of this crisis. And I can tell you from experience that the understaffing with FAFSA was a huge factor. There were a lot of times where calls were either unanswered or they would be ended. So that did put us in a predicament where students who were first generation and trying to work to change the trajectory of their lives were at this point where now we have to pivot or try to figure out, is this what we really want or do we have the resources to go further? So I think everything that has been said so far is pretty accurate.
Okay. And everything I'm reading here indicates, and it's not a surprise, that the drop in applications across the country has most significantly affected families who have lower incomes, incomes between $30,000 and $48,000, and individuals with incomes of $30,000 or less, disproportionately affected. Probably not a surprise, right, Phil?
Not a surprise at all. Typically, people who are not first-generation college students have access to more resources. Generally, as they say, people who have completed at least a bachelor's degree will earn over $1 million more in their lives from whatever career field that they choose. So they also have more access to financial resources. So it's not as much of a burden if they miss out on that application. And then for the students that we are serving locally, a lot of us are not in that situation where we have resources or we know the resources that we have at our fingertips. So we're trying to change those things this year. So that we do not end up in the same situation.
Yeah, and Amy, can you talk a little bit too about how when there is a problem with just access, it is the disadvantaged students who are disproportionately hit by it?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's not okay for a student to do everything within their power to get what they need and run up against yet another barrier. So we are very, very lucky, and Phil can touch more on this, through the Rochester College Access Network that we convene, to have people that are experts in the field helping our students. The school counselors that we work with both at RCSD and the charter schools spend a lot of time with their students to really get them what they need. We have a FAFSA Fest event at each school. You know, we make like it's a party. There's candy, there's food, there's fun, but there's really a lot of work happening. We ask the students to come prepared, and Phil will touch on what that means. Oftentimes, they don't. Oftentimes, they do, and there's still trouble accessing and getting through the form. We want to help them at our FAFSA Fests both fill out the FAFSA as well as the New York form, the TAP, so that they can get what they need.
Phil, what does it mean to come prepared to those kind of events?
Oh, man. So there is a list of things that you need. One, students need to have access to their Social Security number. In addition to that, they need to have parents or guardians who have already filed the previous year's taxes. They need to have the W-2s if their parents were working. If they have adults in their lives or guardians who did not work, then they need to have like a non-tax filers statement. In addition to those things, they also need to have an FSAID created. The FSAID is just the username that you use to actually sign in and complete the FAFSA. Those are the major components that they'll need, and then a bunch of little one-offs based on specific situations.
And we're going to be talking this hour about what the foundation is doing on a number of different levels. They want you to know it. We're talking to Phil Hounshell, Director of College Access and Success Programs for the Rochester Education Foundation. Amy Stein is the Executive Director. Closing the loop on some of what's going on with FAFSA now, there's a couple things that I want to make sure we talk about. First of all, you know, when Phil talks about especially a first generation, a first-time student in a family who is going to go through this process, is going to seek higher education, and wants to believe that it can be attainable when it has not yet been attained in their family. And then you have this meltdown with this FAFSA program, and students, you can't get a call back, you can't get information, you may be missing deadlines, you may not know how to finish this off. Not only does it seem to me that those students may not actually go to college, they may say it didn't work, that may really crush someone's faith in institutions in general about, you know, how society works or doesn't work, or who it's set up to work for or who it works against. I mean, I feel like it could have spinoff effects here. What do you think, Phil?
I think you're absolutely correct. Maybe you've been reading the blogs or something, because one of the lines that we hear a lot lately is college is a scam. And if you have been treated misfairly, if you have missed out on opportunities, or if you were never really aware of how to properly go about doing things, it may feel like a scam. One of the students who come to mind, literally, none of you know this, but was just texting me as we walked into the door today because he did not know about FAFSA. So I've been helping him complete his FAFSA over the last couple weeks so that he can attend the classes that he's already signed up for. Currently, he's looking at a bunch of loans because FAFSA wasn't completed. Now, his outlook has changed, and he realizes that this is an option, and it doesn't have to be the expensive debt sentence that it was.
But Phil, you're saying that it's become a kind of a meme or a theme among young people that, well, look at this. I mean, college is a scam?
Correct.
That's dangerous, because that can really spiral quickly, can't it?
Extremely, especially on social media these days.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I grew up without social media. Oh, boy. Thank goodness. The student you just described getting FAFSA help now, this student is taking classes now?
He's
taking fall
enrolled classes. Yep.
Okay. Is there a kind of grace period that whether the DOE or whoever is doing, because FAFSA was such a mess for the last year, are they helping fix this for people? Is something happening to fix some of this?
I can't say for sure if the Department of Education is doing anything to fix it, but the last year's FAFSA application, which would be the 2024 to 25, would remain open until the next one is actually available, which is going to be on December 1st. So if you still need aid for this school year, there is time to sign up.
That's important. Probably a surprise to some families and students, Amy.
Well, also, our financial aid folks, they truly care about students. I've seen some of our partners go so far above and beyond to help students get what they need. They want them to succeed. They want them to get all the things that they need. They don't want them walking out with a whole bunch of debt. So if they're able to be helpful, they're going to be helpful and point them in the right direction. They love it when they get that form filled out.
Closing the loop on FAFSA, here's what NPR says happens next. Quote, to help families avoid having to deal with glitches or other problems with the form this fall, the Department of Education has decided to open up the 2025-2026 FAFSA in phases. Only a limited number of students and families will be able to access the form on the traditional October 1 launch date. As the department conducts a testing phase, the form is scheduled to be available to everyone on December 1st. Is that correct, Phil?
That is correct. So what they have done to try to eliminate some of the issues that we had as the last FAFSA was rolled out is, as you said, October 1st, which was yesterday, there are certain places around the country that have been granted access to the new FAFSA. So they will get to see it and start to try to apply for financial aid ahead of other people. This will help the government to hopefully eliminate some of those errors that were there last year.
How confident are both of you that we're past the worst of the FAFSA stuff? I wish there was a camera on Phil. You look pained over there. You want to believe that we're past it?
I would love to believe it. I just need them to restore my faith. I mean, there were a lot of dates that were hurled around last year. So after you've been, after you've seen a pattern for a while, you have to see something different to make you believe that that pattern will not continue.
That's fair. Amy?
Well, that being said, as pained as our faces may look to you, we're also planners, and we are taking advantage of this opportunity of the late opening to see what can we get right. Which of our students in the past came to us, like this past year, with the new situation? who came to us and had the best and quickest outcomes? How were they most successful? So one of the things that we learned is those students that have already filled out their FSA ID, that have already obtained that by going through the form. And by the way, we do have a play-by-play of exactly how you do that. And Phil can give it to any listener who wants. But anyway, those folks that had that done and ready were more successful than those who didn't. So our action plan is to go into all the schools now, and we've begun partners both at the charter schools and at RCSD schools to help students fill out that FSA ID today. And from there, we're also doing information sessions of what does it look like to apply to college. Not only do you have to get your financial aid things in order, but you have to apply to college. I met a young lady last January who was all excited to be at our FAFSA Fest, brought everything that she was supposed to. And when I said to her, where are you hoping to go to school? She looked at me and said, well, what do you mean? I don't have the means to do that. I'm doing this first. So we are making it our business to educate students that the fall is the time to get in those applications as well as all the financial aid pieces. And we are working with every partner that we have to help ensure that this happens.
Since the pandemic, I've been curious to see if the numbers would get back to where they were pre-pandemic. We saw, obviously, a lot of disruption. We've seen some colleges merge or close in the last couple of years. We could see more. There's a lot of talk about that. And the overall numbers that I have seen, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm curious to know what you've seen, just nationwide, number of students going to college is down a few percentage points. And it is not back to where it was pre-pandemic. And that could be partially related to messes like FAFSA, but it's also a pandemic outcome. There's a lot of different factors that go into it. Where do you think we are with this, Amy, and what's a realistic goal for the future on this?
I have to say I'm not even sure. It's really like a broad question and a good one that we think about all the time, but I'm not terribly sure where we're going. What we are looking to do here in Rochester is to help the city of Rochester become a college-going community like peer districts right nearby, so that not necessarily will every student go to college, but our mission is to help every student understand that going to college is one of the choices that they have. And what this does is open things up so that their pathways are known to them and that everyone is looking forward to their future of what comes next after high school graduation.
Yeah. So you just heard Amy describe the mission, and I'm glad you did, because the Rochester Education Foundation is represented by the Executive Director, Amy Stein, Phil Hounshell with us, Director of College Access and Success Programs for the REF, the Rochester Education Foundation. Again, you're working with how many students on an annual basis typically, Amy?
Well, we work with thousands and thousands of students in the entirety of the high school students and then the elementary school students as well.
So let's kind of work through different ways that you're doing that. And I want to talk about the college success, college access and success work. I want to talk about some of the other programs like Future Fair, things like that, that you've got on the menu here. And if you don't mind, I want to go through one by one because I think listeners need to understand this. So first of all, the Rochester Education Foundation's college access and success work. Phil, how would you describe the work that you're doing?
Impactful is how I hope it will be, or how I hope it will come off. The work that we do is really just opening up students' eyes to what the possibilities could be after high school. And speaking with a lot of students and understanding what their goals are, we see that a lot of people are, or a lot of students are short-sighted or are not really sure about what they could potentially do. Some of them have been told no. Some of them have had their dreams shut down. Some of them have seen those memes that said college is a scam and they've tried to go a different direction. So the work that we do is to enlighten them about possibilities and make sure that they are taking the right path to get there.
Okay. And in a moment, I want to talk about Future Fair. I want to talk about starting young and maybe trying to counter some of those perceptions, because as we've already talked about, if there's an ongoing theme that college is a scam, we're in real trouble here. But Phil, you heard Amy say that one of the pieces of the mission is to make sure that a district like Rochester is not massively outpaced in terms of college opportunity and access from the districts around it. And we understand there's inequities. Poverty plays a big role. Access, information, just understanding what's available is a big part of this. Is it realistic in your goal that we'll sit here one day and say, Rochester's pretty much at parity with suburban districts in terms of college students deciding to apply, students going to college? Not to say everyone should go or has to go, as Amy said, but just something closer to parity. Is that realistic?
I think it is realistic. Having knowledge, having resources, and having someone or some people who believe in you makes a huge difference. And at REF, Rochester Education Foundation, we don't shy away from collaborations. So we want to make sure that everyone has access to whatever resources could be beneficial to them and their future. So by granting that access, by making sure that we are there to present information, that we are popping up at schools to present information, that we are in the community at different events that are happening, I know that the word will get out there and that students will have their minds open to what those new possibilities could be for them and put them on an equal playing field with their neighbors and countering or in different counties and districts.
Mm-hmm. Amy, what do you think about how realistic it is to see Rochester at parity with suburban districts at some point in the future?
I'm going to go with a hard yes, because we can. Because we in Rochester are a community of doers. We in Rochester are lucky to be absolutely resource rich, and we have a whole bunch of people who care. And we also have bright, thoughtful young people in our schools in the city of Rochester. So yes, I absolutely think we can get there.
After we take this only break, we're going to talk about Future Fair. We're going to talk about the work that's being done all the way down to the elementary level that the Rochester Education Foundation is doing. We'll make sure that they let you know about anything that they think should be on your calendars or someone you love, because this is an important time. I mean, it's always important. And what we're finding is you have to start early. You have to talk to people about opportunities and options and make sure at least it's on a student's mind, a family's mind, especially for a family that thinks, if we're talking about college, we can't afford it. We'll never afford it. It's not for us. It's not for my, no one's in my family has ever done it. I mean, our guests hear that all the time, and they work to counter that. They work to make sure that that changes. So we'll take this break. We'll come back with them and tell you more about what's happening in our community next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections. Philanthropy is down across the country. It's affecting organizations like the United Way, and you've probably seen WXXI reporting on the challenges that the United Way in our area is facing. Who to fund, what to cut, and we're going to talk to leaders from the United Way about what they're doing. In our second hour, we welcome Damon Meeks and Scott Kamagis running for New York State Assembly. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Alan writes to the program and says, "Hi, Evan. In my day, Harvard and the Ivies were a destination for many of the top students, no matter their income. I'm not sure if they're considered the jewel of the crown anymore, but can your guests talk about whether the Harvards or the Ivies are places that our students can go to if they get the opportunity?" That's from Alan. Phil?
Those are absolutely options. So to our previous point of just about providing knowledge about the opportunities that are available, one of those opportunities is the QuestBridge Scholarship that a lot of students don't know about. And what QuestBridge does is reach out specifically to the top 10% GPAs in any cohort. So at any school, doesn't matter the district, you could be a QuestBridge Scholar if you fall in the top 10%. And they partner with the most selective schools in the country. So when we think about how do you get to Yale, Princeton, Brown, Notre Dame, things like that, they participate in QuestBridge. And as long as you fall within the guidelines, this could be within your reach. Not only is it within your reach, it is within your reach at whatever your family can afford. They have to meet you at whatever your need is. So if the government decides that your family cannot afford to pay for college, but you happen to fall within that top 10% of your cohort, you will be able to attend one of those schools for free.
I am starting to think, as the hour goes on, that Amy was right. I think everybody who needs to get this information needs to somehow find a way to talk to Phil Hounshell, because there's so much information. What's the name of what is the program? The Bridge?
It's called the Quest Bridge Scholarship.
Quest Bridge Scholarship.
However,
yeah.
If you have not already applied, you've missed the deadline for this year. So that application does start pretty early. The deadline to turn everything in is September 26th. I do have a couple students who are going through the process and are on to the second round. It's a very competitive scholarship process, but it's worth it in the end.
I'm sure. I'm going to get myself in a little bit of trouble and just say to Alan or others who are inquiring about this, and I know that this is not, there's a little bit of apples and oranges. It's not pure dollars. But when you see the endowments of some of the Ivies and the Stanfords of the world, I'm sort of surprised that their history isn't better with really just breaking down barriers and making it a mission. I mean, boy, oh boy. Everybody in the country should know what Phil just said.
And
that should be known early on. That should be a big part of how the quote-unquote top schools market themselves. They should care about this. So you shouldn't have to like figure out how to find Amy Stein or Phil Hounshell to know about this. That's just my little soapbox. That's the end of my TED Talk about that. The other question I have related to this, though, is when you say they have to meet families where they are financially, mm-hmm. One thing that I think is confusing is the sticker price of a school. And sticker price is very capable of turning people away to make someone think, oh my gosh, $68,000? Like that's a year? That's not going to be me. And then when you talk to the school officials, here's what they say in this program. Well, very few of our students actually pay the top sticker price. You know, so 78% of our students are on this kind of aid, and another 15% are on this, and only 10% pay full freight or whatever. You know, that's great, I guess. But the public sees the sticker price. I think students do. I think that's what they share with each other. That's what happened when I was growing up. I remember thinking in Ohio, Denison University is $25,000 a year. That's where my brother went. He had a T-shirt that had a guy thrown up in a toilet saying, this is what my dad's getting for $25,000 a year. It's a terrible message. I remember that. That sticker price was on my brain, and I remember thinking, $25,000? Who can afford $25,000? Well, now you're cheap if you're $25,000.
Oh, yeah. And
on the sticker, at least.
Right. And our goal is to let students know that college is an opportunity if they want it. That will not be the sticker price for them, will not be the price. And we can help them access the tools needed to get there. Additionally, we partner with everyone for scholarships. The Rochester Area Community Foundation is central and amazing at holding many of the scholarships, but not all, that are available to students. And we partner with them. We give out their information right alongside of ours so that students can see this. Anytime someone shares with us that there's a scholarship, we add it to our list of resources to share with students.
Phil, do you think sticker price can turn students off if they don't understand aid?
I'm sure it can. That's why the educational portion is like paramount to success. If you do not understand how to interpret those things, if you do not understand what financial aid is, yes, that sticker price will turn you away. What I want everyone to know is you should apply for FAFSA.
Apply. There are different avenues. Absolutely. I just got a text from a listener who's listening from work saying, proud parent. Just want to brag, my son is a graduate of RCSD and is a freshman at Cornell. Yes, they do go to the top schools. Awesome. Love that. I mean, I love that story. And there's, I mean, if you know Amy and Phil, you probably know so many stories like that that make them proud every year. But part of their mission is to make sure there are more. So let's talk about what else the Rochester Education Foundation is doing. Can you both tell me about Future Fair? What is it?
So, you know, we start talking with our 12th graders about, you got to do the FAFSA, you got to do this. We actually start before that. We tell our 11th graders, this is what what you're going to need to do next year. We start before that. We bring 10th graders to different events and opportunities. We start before that. We bring 9th graders on tour of colleges locally so that they can see, oh, this really could be a place for me. Our team at the Rochester College Access Network said, you know, here we are with the bulk of our efforts being at our oldest grade. How do we change things a little bit more even? As I said before, if we put ourselves in a position where students know that opportunities are out there and that they can do anything. I met with a group of 6th graders to prepare for this event, the Future Fair, that is for our 7th graders. I actually met with several different groups of 6th graders. And I said, we're planning an event for you, and I need your input. And they looked at me like, what? What do you mean you need my input? So this is for you. Because it's for you, we're going to ask you for your input so we get it right. And we talked about, well, what are some of the careers that you know? And the list was limited. I mean, they could tell me all about professional athletes. They could tell me all about entertainers and influencers and whatever else. I said, well, I'm asking because I want to bring people to you, and I don't have access to that. So what other careers do you know? Because I believe that it is our job as the village to show kids what could be. And in so doing, they also need to know what the education and training is to get there. So the Future Fair was born because we realized that a lot of our kids don't really know what the choices are. I have surveys that have a very small list of careers that they know. In fact, I remember one class in particular, they all sat and looked at me blank. And I said, well, let's start with this. We're at a school. Oh, teacher, have you ever been to the doctor? What do adults in your life do? And they began to share. A number of the students in that particular class had folks in their family that worked at Wegmans. And I said, really? I said, do you know how fabulous Wegmans is for our community? And I asked what some of the positions that their family members had. They told us. And I said, there's other jobs at Wegmans, too, in order for them to build their entire structure. And some of those people are going to be with us at the Future Fair. So we have 70 professionals from the community, some brand new to their jobs and some absolutely seasoned, that are going to be with us at St. John Fisher on the 11th and of October. And our students are going to come for a 90-minute experience and get to go meet 7 of them and really learn, what did it take for them to get there? Kind of a museum, if you will, of individuals who like their job, are financially independent, and give back to the community, because our kids can be those people and they need to see it to be it.
7th grade you start then.
7th grade.
That's awesome. It's also kind of harrowing to think that you could have a room full of students who haven't really kind of considered what careers could look like. You know, that's tough. It's kind of heartbreaking in the sense, but you're getting in there to change that.
Yes. We talked about the need to earn money and all the things that you can do with it. And it was a longer list than pay your bills. And it was exciting to the kids. We talked about being able to truly like your job. And I remember one young man, literally, his jaw dropped. What do you mean you can like your job? I had another student say to me, well, what's your job? And I said, I didn't even know this was a job. And that could happen to you. And they were very, very much engaged and are excited to be there on October 11th with our career models.
So that's happening next week.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil, can you just describe a little bit about the importance about starting at this age, this particular age, and what the impact can be?
Yeah, absolutely. So, statistically, they say by about 6th grade, if a student does not have an interest in their future, it is nearly impossible to bring them back to actually believe that a future is something that they can have. So the earlier that we start them into thinking about what the possibilities can be, the more impact that we can have to raise more successful, brighter futures in our community.
Yeah. I think we've spent a lot of time in the last couple of years talking about an issue that, at least to me, in the last couple of years, it has come up more often than ever before, and that's nihilism, this idea that nothing matters, You know, people say, well, why would a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old steal a car? Like, what is going on? They don't see a future. Mm-hmm. If society has told you that you are not relevant, you don't matter, there isn't something for you, I'm not trying to justify it. I'm trying to understand it. And that's part of what Phil is describing too, this idea that if there's not, by a certain age, an idea of this is what my future might look like, if there's nothing in there but blank space, then it's going to start to get filled with things that we don't want kids pursuing, right?
For sure. One thing that I like to tell the students and anybody else who will listen, that it is, it's impossible to want to be anything that you do not see. So if all you see around you is violence, destruction, and people who are in the same type of career paths, then that's what you want to be. However, if you're surrounded by more successful people, people who have gone to college, people who are making a certain dollar amount legally, then you aspire to want to be that.
You two both always thought you'd grow up to be in the RAF, right? And probably as a fifth grade.
Oh, of course.
I mean, like, how can anybody predict their future? And that's the beauty of it. But you have to also have to have this openness to anything being possible. I don't know. Amy, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
It changed a lot of times. And that's what I said to the kids, too. I had them fill out physical paper surveys so we can look at them again. And actually, each of our seventh graders are filling out two surveys, one before this event and one afterwards. And I promised them that the bulk of them that answer would continue to change. Some of them, it wouldn't. But right now, I'm in my dream job.
That's pretty good. What about you, Phil?
Ooh, so many things. I wanted to be it all. I actually went to school for communications, and I was working in this world. I was doing journalism and voiceovers and working behind the scenes, running the boards at a radio station in Buffalo. And then I kind of did some more self-work and found out what the path was that I should actually be on. And I feel like I'm living it more in my purpose at this point.
I mean, you've got to every day feel like you're making this world better. That's pretty good.
We try.
Well, let's talk about the SMILE program, because we've talked about Future Fair, which goes all the way back to seventh grade. SMILE program goes how young, Amy?
Pre-K.
Pre-K. Tell us about it.
So the real hero here is a gentleman named Mr. Dave Beck. The SMILE program was founded, created, and funded by Dave Beck 12 years ago. He continues to be the person that is most involved and the person that is giving the most funding to this program. Why? Because he wants the kids to have a smile on their face. That's what the program was named for. When he retired, he knocked on the door 12 years ago of one of the high schools in the city and said, I want to help. I have a background in math and science, and I have some dollars, and I'm here and I want to help. And the principal smiled and looked at him and said, you're too late. And he said, what do you mean? The principal told him, go younger. And he knocked on the door of an elementary school at the time. It was school 23, was the first school that the SMILE program started in. And the principal there said, you can never leave. And he built this program twofold. The goal is to help our elementary school kids have a good day at school and to feel fabulous about learning and to love learning. And you can do that if you feel comfortable in your building, in your surroundings, in your community, and if you are given those opportunities. So it's twofold. One, learning is fun, and it is programs that complement the science curriculum. Big, wow, memorable programs. Evan, I will invite you to come into a whale in March.
A whale?
Absolutely.
The whale mobile?
The whale mobile shows up with educators that are so interesting. I mean, when I've gone, and it's been more than once, I come home and I can't stop talking about it. And I was inside this whale. You get to crawl inside, you know, it's a life-size whale. And I'm sitting next to a third grader who's never been to the ocean. They remember it. I have a poster with a number of the things that REF does. And every time I'm in the community, students will come up and point and say, the whale, I was in there. And I say, me too. And it's exciting. But it's something that is remembered. And the educators that are with these students tell us that it helps them not only with this particular project, but with the other learning that they're doing as well, because it becomes more exciting and more relevant. And then Just Plain Fun supports parent-teacher organizations so that the school has funds that they have their autonomy over deciding what is going to bring true community to that school. And they're all different. It's so fun to see. There have been schools that bought book vending machines. I did not, by the way, know that that was a thing. It's really cool. They have refinished art classrooms. They've bought different things for exciting parties for attendance or for academic achievements. And it's been fantastic at each of the schools.
I want to believe, by the way, that a book vending machine is still possible. You know, books are kind of going out of fashion, so I hope we're all still loving books.
We are loving books, and we're sending the message that we are doing so. What's most exciting is, I don't know if you pay attention to those really important holidays, like Coffee Day was the other day I celebrated. And we should all celebrate.
Every day is Coffee Day.
Come right?
On. Yeah.
But we should all celebrate International Smile Day on Friday, October 4th. It is a thing. But for us at REF, at the Rochester Education Foundation, it is a thing because we are celebrating that this year, the SMILE program, thanks to Dave Beck and other funders, is in every single one of the RCSD elementary schools. All 25 schools now have this program as part of what they do. And we are, Dave had approached us when I first arrived to my position. I got here in May of 22. In June of 22, he knocked at my door and said, I've been waiting for you. I need to partner with you because this is now in 10 schools and it needs to be in all of them. And we need the community's help.
25 elementary schools, right?
Every single one, yes.
Yeah. So the cynical listener might think, what you're describing is beautiful. But why does it take a philanthropist like Dave Beck? Like, why isn't this common in all schools? Because it feels a little bit like, maybe I'm wrong, it feels a little bit like what we're describing is trying to fill in the gaps in a district that has higher rates of poverty and fewer resources, when a lot of what we're describing is the kinds of things we would see in wealthier districts. And why does it take a Dave Beck? The cynical listener would say, is this the right like system for this? What do you think, Amy?
I think that when Dave first approached me, I put that hat on because really my immediate response was, oh my gosh, how can we help? But I did. I wanted to look at it through all the lenses. And our board actually spent an entire year researching and figuring out, does this partnership make sense? Will it work for us? If we say yes, what does it mean? And what it means is we believe in our students. My kids grew up in a different district, and whenever I was asked for money for whatever the field trip was or whatever the thing was, I said, here you go. Let me also say RCSD does an amazing job of having opportunities and resources and field trips for kids. This program is exactly what you said, those extras that are typically given by parents. So when you're in a situation where more than 40% of the people are not in a financial position to help in the way that some of the parents are in other districts, it changes things. So this kind of helps make it more level and equitable.
Phil, how do you see this one?
I believe that people with the passion and persistence as Dave Beck are essential. Without those different experiences that the children are able to get, they'll continue to just be what they see. But once you are exposed to new things, your mind is open to new possibilities. And because of the work that he's doing, they will be open to new possibilities and will be thinking of different ways that they can affect their community, that they can affect their future generations. And I think it's just a good work. And if more people were willing to do this work, we would not see the inequities that we see between from district to district.
Well, we've talked a lot this hour about what the Rochester Education Foundation is doing amidst a time where it's been a tough year plus in the financial aid world with sort of the redesign of FAFSA. And our guests are hoping that we're on the back end of that and things are going to get much more smooth going forward with the process of students applying, seeking, and getting federal aid to go to college if they want to go to college. But I want to make sure they tell you any deadlines or dates, et cetera. You know, we've talked about a lot here. Amy, what's the calendar look like coming up here?
So our listeners can help us by participating in our online auction that's going to be October 15th through the 24th. We are excited for our future fair, and you can just be on the listen for how great it was and what our students learned. And then, of course, Phil, what's the important date that we need to know for FAFSA?
Everyone should know December 1st is when FAFSA opens for the 25 to 26 school year. Additionally, for any college students or anyone who works in the educational sector, early action, early decision dates are coming up really, really quick. So if anyone is interested in applying any schools early, November 1st, November 15th, and December 1st are actually very key dates to know.
As we get ready to wrap here, I just want to ask, I want to know how Phil, if you were designing an aid system from scratch, if it would look a lot like what we think FAFSA is going to be, if it would be different. Last hour, we had a guest from the local Libertarian Party, and I told him, I said, Kevin, the beginning of the next hour is going to sound like an advertisement for the Libertarian Party, because people are just going to say, like, boy, the government botched this rollout. It doesn't mean it can't be fixed. I mean, the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, if people remember back in the day, was terribly botched. You know, they got it under control. I hope that's what's happening with FAFSA. But in terms of how complicated versus how simple, how straightforward versus how knotted and messy, what would you design? I mean, does it look a lot like this or does it look different?
I think it does look pretty similar. So despite all of the hiccups last year, when the form was at its best, it was a lot simpler than what it had been in previous years. I do like the idea of having a soft opening where some places are able to start to pilot and see if there are any kinks this year so that we can actually get ahead of it and not have applications on hold for months at a time. So I would design something similar to this, but I would also include, give the people what they need. College is expensive sometimes. Just what is the best way to get to the money? That's what I would include in that application.
When you work with students who are maybe skeptical, what are the most common questions they have?
Why do I need their information? And one of the biggest, that's the biggest question that comes up. I don't need your information. The government needs your information so that they can determine what you have access to, so that they can determine how much they can actually afford to give you.
That sounds like a trust issue. I mean, like why am I giving this to you?
Yeah.
Right.
So the best way to break that down a lot of times is just building relationships. That's why I think it's really powerful for us to show face in the community, for us to be present in the schools so that we can get to learn the students, get to learn the families, get to learn what their actual needs are, and support them in the best ways possible.
Have you been able to really turn someone's very dark negative view of college into positive direction? Have you seen examples of that?
So many. I can go back to last year when I was working in a high school, still doing this work. I was a college counselor, and I had a student who pulled me aside at the beginning of the year and told me and my mom are all on the same page. We are absolutely not going to college. I don't need your help. So on and so forth. That same student and his brother came to me in April of that same school year and said, Mr. Houndshaw, how do we apply for college? They sat in my office that day. They filled out the FAFSA. They came back a couple days later. They applied for TAP, and then they applied for MCC, and that's where they are now.
What happened in the middle, though, from that, you know, we're all on the same page, we're not going, to how do we apply?
There was a lot of me telling them that they have to envision a future. So if it's not college, what is the option? Are you going to work? Are you going to go to trade school? you have to do something, because if you are not doing any of those things, you are just out here in the abyss, and nobody wants to be in the abyss.
And it worked with them.
I mean, a lot more stronger language sometimes, and sometimes more intense conversations brought their parents into that conversation. But a lot of times it's honestly just about partnership and just standing your ground. This is what I believe. I believe that the option for college should be available for everyone. I know what it did for me, and I know what it can potentially do for you.
About 40 seconds left. So for someone who's never gone through this process, is feels intimidating, where do they start? Where do they need to go to?
We want to help them. We believe in our students, and they can even just send us an email to FAFSA@rochestereducation.org.
Okay.
That's FAFSA@rochestereducation.org. If you feel confident enough to do it on your own, you can start now just by going to studentaid.gov. Create yourself an FSA ID, which is just your username, to start completing that FAFSA form once it opens on December 1st.
I really appreciate what Amy and Phil have brought to us this hour and what you bring to the community. And I want to thank them for making the time to tell you about these various dates on their calendar, how to get prepared, how to help more people. Amy Stein, Executive Director of the Rochester Education Foundation. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks to Phil Hounshell, Director of College Access and Success Programs for the REF. Great having you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
From the whole team at Connections, thank you for listening. We will be back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.